Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Dr. Russell Blaylock, who's going to be our guest here at the Radio Liberty annual conference here on the 26th of October, and we do hope many of you out there will be coming to hear him talk. But this evening we're going to be talking, well, I think we're going to be talking about vaccines. But most people believe that America is certainly one of the healthiest countries in the world. Certainly, we spend an awful lot for medicine, but look how healthy we are. And yet, of course, if you look at the world statistics, why, the longevity of the average American male is about 40th in the world. In other words, we do not live longer than most other people. The incidence of cancer is much higher in this country. The incidence of heart disease and diabetes compared with comparable age groups in England is much higher in the United States than in other countries. And the question is, why do we have so many diseases? Why do we have so much juvenile diabetes, way more than we ever used to have, and so much juvenile asthma and allergies and autoimmune disease and neurodegenerative diseases like autism? Why do we have all these diseases in America today? And, of course, certainly a gentleman who's been researching this for many years is our good friend, Dr. Russell Blaylock. I've known Russell probably 20, 25 years or more. But in recent years, of course, he spent his time reading the scientific literature and, of course, writes a wonderful newsletter, the Blaylock Wellness Report, which if you don't take, you sure should. But, Russell, thank you so very much for being with us.
Well, thank you, Stan. I appreciate you inviting me.
Well, why don't you tell them, what are we going to talk about tonight?
We can talk about vaccines.
All right, fine.
I think that's always an interesting and very important subject.
Right now, of course, they're trying to convince everybody that the children got to start getting their flu vaccine because winter's coming on, and certainly the elder people said start taking their influenza vaccine, how important that is for their health, because the U.S. Public Health Service and the CDC says, boy, we got to take your influenza vaccine. I'm going to let you go ahead and tell the story from there.
There's a tremendous impulse to get people to take the flu vaccine. In fact, several of us have noticed that everywhere you go, whether it's a grocery store, there's a big sign that says, get your flu shots early. We have flu shots here. And I saw things in the newspaper telling mothers you need to bring your children down. CDC now recommends a flu shot starting at age 6 months in babies and then every year thereafter. So there's a real push, the worst I've ever seen, in getting flu shots, particularly targeting children. Now, there's a lot of fanfare about them taking mercury out of childhood vaccines. But the flu shot has full dose of mercury in it. So here we're back giving these little small children a dose of this brain-destroying mercury. That's one of the aspects of it. But what really concerns me is a couple of things. One is people are being fed a lie that the flu vaccine, number one, is effective. This past year, They told the elderly that, oh, this is going to be a very bad year for the flu. Everybody needs to get their flu shot. Well, it wasn't a bad flu year. And then the CDC announced, well, we picked the wrong virus, and the flu shot really didn't protect you at all. So all those millions of people who took their flu shot got absolutely no protection from it all, but they all got a nice dose of mercury as well as aluminum and other contaminants. What we see is each year the people who make flu vaccines guess on which virus.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Go right ahead, Russell.
So what they have to do, they have to guess every year is this going to be the virus that's going to affect us this year? Because they're picking the virus from the previous year. And quite often they pick the wrong virus, and so the vaccine is totally ineffective. The other thing that they don't tell the public is that in the elderly, because of the natural decrease in immune ability as you get older, many of these people can't respond to the vaccine, so it doesn't do them any good at all. And there's a growing number of people who are immunocompromised, people who have cancer treatments, people who take various drugs that suppress the immunity, transplant patients. None of those patients respond to these vaccines. So they're not going to get any protection from the vaccine. And recently they discovered that there's a lot larger segment of the population, both in young children as well as adults, who have marginally compromised immune systems, and so they don't respond to the vaccines either, so it doesn't really help them either. So they're being filled a bill of goods. Now, one of the studies on children showed that under age two, the flu vaccine was had zero effectiveness, even when they picked the correct virus. So most children under age two, or virtually all children in this study, had no benefit, yet they're telling mothers to bring their six-month-old, one-year-old children down to get the flu vaccine. Now, when you get up into the older age groups, at best, you get about a 30% effectiveness of the flu vaccine. So that means about 70% are getting no benefit whatsoever. And the vaccine is making a number of people sick. That's because of the adjuvants, the immune stimulants that are put into the vaccine can make you ill. You feel like you have the flu, and so you're quite ill. And this is why a lot of people think after they get the flu vaccine, it gave them the flu. And, of course, the proponents of vaccine laugh and say, well, it's a dead virus. You can't get the flu from the flu vaccine. Well, you can get all the symptoms from the flu because of the immune adjuvants added to the vaccine. And so you'll be just as sick and sick for a very prolonged time from getting this vaccine. The other thing they don't tell people is that the mercury in the vaccine is an immune suppressant. So that when you get the vaccine, it suppresses your immune system. And then you're more likely to get the flu.
Hold that thought. Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course our guest is Dr. Russell Blaylock, pointing out, of course, the scientific studies show that, first of all, in the elderly, they really don't get any result from the flu immunization. They usually pick the wrong virus. And in children less than 2 years of age, there's one recent study that shows it does absolutely no good. It doesn't help children less than 2 years of age as far as preventing influenza. But, of course, these children are getting not only the mercury that is in these vaccines. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, they left a full dose of mercury in all the vaccines given to the elderly and the children, but they don't tell you that. And then, of course, they have all the other products that are in there, the alum, which is an aluminum product. Why would you want to give toxic aluminum to a six-month-old child or a pregnant woman, you know, in the first trimester of pregnancy? And that's what they're recommending with influenza in immunization, giving it to women in the first trimester of their pregnancy. And of course, Russell points out, so many people get all the symptoms of the flu after they take their vaccine. And of course, everybody says, well, they can't get it. The virus is dead. No, but it may be dead, but you're certainly getting all the products that go into the vaccine, including the mercury, which suppresses your immune system and makes you more susceptible to getting the flu. So pick the story up there, please, Russell.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It can make you more susceptible because mercury is such a potent immune suppressant. And they know that. I mean, that's well demonstrated in the scientific literature and has been known for quite a while. It's not new information. But they keep this secret. Now, the other thing about the childhood flu vaccine is they never tell parents, and most physicians are not aware of it, or else they just don't think about it. But when a baby is born, for about the first 6 months of life, It has a type of immune function that suppresses their reaction to viruses. In other words, they're highly susceptible to getting viruses during that first 6 months. And that's why the mother breastfeeds the baby, because she provides her immunity to the baby during that six-month period. And then normally at about 6 or 7 months, the immune system of the baby switches over so that they can fight viruses. Now, the purpose of that initial immune suppression for the first 6 months of life is because when the baby's inside of the mother, you don't want its immune system rejecting the mother, because then it would die. So the immune system is built by God so that it's non-reactive for the first 6 months of life. Now, the problem is mothers aren't breastfeeding like they used to. Half of the women that have babies don't breastfeed them. Giving them bottled milk gives them no immunity whatsoever. So the babies that are bottle-fed are highly susceptible to every kind of infection for that first 6 months of life. Because their immune system is not functional at that point, vaccinations are totally worthless. No vaccine will give any immunity during that first 6 months. That is something that's known by the vaccine community. And it can extend all the way up to a year. So they know that from 6 months to a year, most babies are not going to respond to any immunization. So this nonsense of giving hepatitis B when they're born is doomed to failure, and it gives them absolutely no protection against hepatitis B. But what they did find is that if you give the hepatitis B vaccine at birth, it extends that period of immune suppression in the baby much longer, so it can last over a year, even 2 years. So then you have a period where the baby's really susceptible for a very long period of time. Vaccines won't help, and so the baby's at very high risk because they gave that baby the hepatitis B vaccine at birth. Now, when they started looking at, for instance, influenza deaths in children, what they found is that the incidence was extremely low until they started giving infants the flu vaccine. Then the death rate from flu in children increased sevenfold. So there was this enormous increase in flu deaths in children because of the flu vaccine itself. So there's this 700% increase in flu deaths in these infants caused by the vaccine. Mothers are not told that. And so here's the CDC recommending that all mothers vaccinate their 6-month-old with a dose of mercury, knowing that the vaccine is ineffective at that age group and that it's going to increase the risk of that child dying 700%. So, you know, this is a national scandal in the medical community and the government CDC, the Centers for Disease Control.
But I don't think the average doctor, the average pediatrician, really has any idea about these things, do you?
Oh, the vast majority have no clue. You know, if you would tell them that, they would be shocked, and they wouldn't be able to believe it until they looked at the scientific literature and saw that it was true. What they're being told by the American Academy of Pediatrics or the Family Practice Association is that these vaccines are perfectly safe, that this protects the child, and that this is what you need to do. So they think they're doing what's right. You know, the doctor feels he's really doing what's best for his community and for the infants and children. It's not that he's nefarious. It's that the physician is being lied to as well, and they're not aware of that. And they're not aware that the reason these people are telling these lies is because of the interaction between the companies making billions off these vaccines and the Centers for Disease Control and the American Academy of Pediatrics, et cetera, who have been shown that their vaccine recommendation boards, a number of the members are receiving monies from these pharmaceutical companies. And so there's a tremendous amount of money to be made in the vaccine business, particularly if you can get the government to mandate that everybody should get these vaccines and use a very powerful PR campaign to convince mothers that their babies are at risk if they don't get the flu vaccine.
And they're just coming on board right now, of course, saying the flu season's upon us. You love your children. You get your child and be vaccinated, knowing full well, at least some people know full well, that they're going to do far more harm than good and increase the death in the children sevenfold. But you see, they have a different worldview. They see nothing wrong with that. It's very profitable on one hand, and then, well, some of these people do have a different agenda, but you go right ahead, Russell.
Well, and you look at physicians, you know, most physicians know the flu vaccine doesn't work, that it will make you sick. So they did a study and asked doctors and nurses, do you take the flu vaccine every year? Well, in the survey, 70% of doctors and nurses said no. So only 30% were saying yes. So the vast majority of the medical profession is saying no to the vaccine every year, but they're recommending it for their patients. So this should tell you something, you know, that if it was that effective and that safe, physicians would be doing it because they wouldn't want to miss work because they had the flu. Now, one of the other myths that we have is, well, you know, the really dangerous aspect of the flu is in the elderly, that they're at high risk. And this is why they're vaccinating babies and teenagers, is because they say if we can vaccinate them, they won't give it to the elderly. And so there's this campaign to vaccinate everybody that's in nursing homes and really target the people over age 55 for their flu vaccine. Well, they did studies to see, well, just how protective is it in the elderly? When they looked at people who are living out in their homes, you know, not in nursing homes, the vaccine had zero effectiveness. When they looked at protection of the vaccine and protecting them against getting pneumonia, which is one of the complications that can occur with flu, again, the vaccine had zero effectiveness. Then they looked at people living in nursing homes, and they found that the vaccine, again, had zero effectiveness in the elderly population in nursing homes and protected only 46% of those against pneumonia. So what we're seeing is for the vast majority of elderly and the most at-risk population, the vaccine has no effectiveness at all. It's zero. Yet they have the elderly convinced that they essentially going to have 100% protection if they get their flu shot, even though they know full well the scientific studies show that's just not true. In fact, I just read some articles today about the flu vaccine, and they were saying, well, it's so ineffective in the people in nursing homes that what we need to do is target healthcare workers. And then they found, well, actually in the healthcare workers, it only protects a small percentage of them, and that has really very little protection of that nursing home community. So what we're seeing here is just a sea of lies to sell a ineffective, dangerous vaccine. Now, it goes beyond just being ineffective, and that's because when you try to stimulate the immune system in somebody who has a dysfunctional immune system, you produce a high incidence of autoimmunity. That is, things like lupus and rheumatoid arthritis and brain autoimmune disorders, because the immune system can't function properly. That's well known. That's a well-recognized phenomenon, that you shouldn't try to immunize somebody who has an impaired immune system. Well, a large number of the people over age 55 have abnormal immune systems, part of the aging process. The older you get, the more malfunctional your immune system becomes. And it's purely nutritional. If you change your nutrition, take a few supplements, you can totally repair that immune system. Then you don't need a flu shot at all because you're just as resistant as a younger person. And so, you know, that's sort of the secret that you read when you start looking in virology texts and reading the virology scientific literature.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, Russell, go right ahead.
Well, what you learn from all of this virology studies is that, in fact, the best protection against developing a virus, or at least greatly minimizing the effect of that virus, is good nutrition. When you look at developed countries versus developing countries, there's a dramatic, dramatic difference in death rate and complications from viruses of all types. For instance, measles in Africa can kill tens of thousands of people because there's widespread malnutrition, starvation, and parasitic infection. In the United States, measles rarely kills anyone. The people that it's killed is people that have dysfunctional immune systems. And since they've instituted the vaccine for measles, this is an interesting fact I just learned today, it increased the death rate from measles tenfold. And that's because it caused the measles virus to move from its normal age of infection to a much younger age of infection. That is, it infects children now in infancy, where before they created the vaccine, most children around age 5, when their immune system was better able to combat measles. But as I said, when you're younger, when you're an infant, your immune system doesn't function so well, so you're more likely to die from the measles. So the measles vaccine itself increased the death rate from measles tenfold. So again, this is an idea that supposedly was going to help public health that actually has increased the death rate rather dramatically. Unfortunately, mothers don't know that, and most physicians don't know that. So this is sort of the unintended consequences of vaccine policy. Well, there's a lot of things people don't know about vaccines, and particularly physicians. And what you do, you know, most people don't realize in medical school, you're really not taught anything about vaccines. And most of the immunology courses are a week or 2 weeks, a brief, rapid introduction to immunology, and then that's the last you hear of it through 4 years of medical training. And when you're a resident, you generally don't hear anything about it. So most physicians don't know a lot about vaccines. They don't know what's in them. They don't know about immune reactions. They don't know how complex the immune system is. And that doing certain things like vaccinating with these powerful immune adjuvants can cause severe disruption of the immune system and ruin it for a lifetime. And that vaccinating at certain periods can actually cause severe behavioral problems. For instance, it was learned that if you vaccinate a woman during pregnancy, you significantly increase the risk of her child developing autism or schizophrenia later in life. At first, it was thought that it was the virus itself that was doing that. Then they found out, no, it's the mother's immune reaction to the virus. Which means if you vaccinate during pregnancy, you're greatly increasing the risk of that child developing autism or schizophrenia when they're in their 20s. Now, no one's telling mothers that, and physicians generally don't know that, but we're probably going to see a tremendous increase in the number of cases of schizophrenia.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back with Dr. Blaylock. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Russell was just saying, if you immunize a woman during her pregnancy against these various diseases, it dramatically increases the incidence of autism and of schizophrenia in their children. And when these children get to be 20, 22 years of age, why, many of them will develop schizophrenia that never would have if they had not, their mother had not been immunized during the pregnancy, because that actually activates the mother's immune system, which, of course, begins then to attack the child within her. And what is the justification for giving the vaccines during pregnancy? Well, after all, the Centers for Disease Control says that women should have their flu shot to protect them, you know, during the first trimester of their pregnancy, when there is no evidence that it helps, and there's a great deal of evidence that it harms. So why are they doing it? Well, go right ahead, Russell.
Well, you know, you have to use your imagination or have to understand some of the machinations that are going on in world politics to understand the why. But we know this. I mean, this is scientifically proven that this is very hazardous, and suddenly we're seeing advertisements in papers and articles on television and newspapers and magazines telling women you need to get your flu shot if you're pregnant. That is perfectly safe. Now, that's sheer nonsense. It is not safe. And you know, for a woman to get a vaccine during her pregnancy is insane. And to vaccinate her young newborn is insane. And even during infancy, during the first 2 years of life, is crazy.
And, of course, this idea that you're going to vaccinate that child in the nursery for hepatitis B, which is not a danger to the children. Far more children have die or have complications from the shot than actually ever contract hepatitis B. It is not a problem in newborn children. It's not a problem, you know, until they get to be sexually active or get to the homosexual lifestyle and the IV drug using lifestyle, and that's when it's a problem. But by then, the immunization they got in the nursery has long since worn off, and they have no protection. So it is really, of course, I think a gross miscarriage of medicine. Now, this is a different problem in third world countries, but certainly not in the United States. It's simply a massive experiment with tremendous financial rewards for the vaccine companies here in the United States. But from a medical point of view, it is totally ridiculous. I believe it's gross malpractice, and yet all across America this is being pushed by the Centers for Disease Control and the U.S. Public Health Service. Am I right or am I wrong, Russell?
Well, you're exactly right, and I think what should convince people of the rightness of what we're saying is that people trusted the federal government and the investigative agencies and the regulatory agencies in this financial crisis, yet they were lying to them. They knew that a financial disaster was coming. They had been warned numerous times. It had historically happened many times, not to this degree, but it was all known by the federal government. The federal government played a part in making this financial crisis. Well, if you see this before your eyes right now, and most Americans apparently believe that, why is it so strange to believe that the same government regulatory agencies in the health field are lying to the public on a grand scale, endangering their life, costing the lives and brains of and futures of literally millions of children in this country, killing off a large number of the elderly population? Because, you see, no statistics are kept on the number of people who die after the flu vaccine. For instance, you can die even years after the flu vaccine from complications, and there's no record kept. So we don't have an accurate counting of the number of people who die from flu vaccine. It could be millions. We don't know. But what we do know is that if you use this vaccination process in experimental animals, it makes that animal brain infinitely more sensitive to the toxicity of pesticides, herbicides, mercury, aluminum, a number of toxins. This hypersensitivity to these toxins is something that everyone's exposed to. There's not an elderly person in this country that's not exposed to pesticides and herbicides or to mercury. And so if you're going to do something to them that's going to make their brain many-fold more sensitive to these toxins, that's something they should be aware of. But no one's telling these people that. That when you go and get that flu shot, you're getting a dose of mercury, and the shot itself is going to make that mercury infinitely more toxic to your brain. So it increases your risk of things like Alzheimer's and Parkinson's disease and vascular dementia and stroke, all sorts of things. No one's telling people that. It's just disheartening to me to see these long lines of elderly just fighting to get that flu shot.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest, Dr. Russell Blaylock, a retired neurosurgeon, writes the Blaylock Wellness Report, and of course I take it, read it through. In fact, I was just reading through his latest, A Missile Today, going into the background of cancer, and so much of the information we get about cancer just is not true. But of course, he's talking tonight about vaccines. And all these elderly people believing what they read in the newspaper and hear on the radio and see on television, encouraging to get their influenza shot. They light up. You can get your influenza shot at your local drugstore. Sometimes you can get it at your local grocery store. They're from the public health service. They're here to help you. No, ladies and gentlemen, they're not going to help you. They are going to do far more damage than good. And, of course, some of the people involved know exactly what they're doing. They just don't want you or the elderly to know. Pick up the story there, Russell.
Well, you know, they talk among themselves. In fact, there was a conference that's discussed in Neil Miller's new book, The Vaccine Safety Manual. And he talks about a conference that was held among vaccine manufacturers and the CDC on how they could frighten the public into getting the flu shot. And, of course, one of the methods was putting out this absolute lie that 36,000 people die of the flu every year. That's one of their favorites. The other one is, oh, there's a threat of shortage in the flu shots. You better hurry up and get it before we run out. Well, they found that tactic didn't work well. So this year it's, oh, we have enough flu shot for everybody in the United States. So they used, and this conference showed that they were purposely lying to the public to frighten them into getting their flu shots. Now, one of the most pitiful ones, lies is scaring mothers, because, you know, all mothers are terrified something's going to happen to their child. So, you know, it's a very easy target for these fearmongers. And so they tell the mother, oh, you know, children are dying from the flu now. You need to get the flu shot for your six-month-old or your one-year-old to prevent death. Now, as I've quoted, the scientific literature clearly shows they get no protection, zero, from the vaccine. So they know that, yet they're terrifying these mothers who will bring their children in their pediatrician and say, I want my child to get this flu shot. I don't want my child to die. What's so sad about it is not only does the child get no protection from it, but now you've, by getting the vaccine, made the child much more susceptible to getting the flu and having a serious complication.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here in just a moment with Dr. Blaylock. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Russell Blaylock, and certainly we're talking about the influenza vaccine and how they have programs of trying to frighten mothers into getting the influenza shot for their child, knowing full well this does not do any good for young children, for infants and children. But what they do is they say to the mother, why, you wouldn't want your child to die, would you? And so they use the scare tactics for the mothers, they use it for the elderly, and they're selling influenza shots that they know are of no earthly use, and yet, of course, more and more people are taking them simply because of the massive propaganda campaign, and, of course, Russell quotes from a book that we carry, The Vaccine Safety Manual by Neil Miller, and of course, about these secret meetings held by the CDC and the vaccine manufacturers on how they're going to frighten people, how they're going to manipulate mothers, how they're going to scare the elderly into taking flu shots when they know that they're not going to do any good. Go right ahead, Russell. And before we do, though, why don't we go ahead and tell our listeners how they could subscribe to the Blaylock Wellness Report, which I incidentally do take. I pay for it every year, and I look forward to getting it. Comes on a monthly basis, full of fascinating information that everybody in the listening audience needs to have. Go ahead, Russell. How can people get that?
Best way is go to my website, www.russellblaylockmd.com. It's RussellBlaylockMD.com. And just look under the headline, newsletter, and you can click on that and go right to it.
All right,
it also
fine.
Has the books and other things on there if you look around there. But and it's free information on the website, some of the articles I've published in the area of vaccines and other topics, and some other free information that I write about various subjects. And so, you know, you should look at that because I discuss mercury, what we know about mercury in the brain and brain development. Unfortunately, medical students and doctors aren't being taught this. We're being fed a bunch of lies by the government. They come out and say, well, we've studied mercury. It's not toxic to the brain. We don't find any problem. There's no connection to autism. And people don't realize how carefully those lies were constructed, that they paid for studies to be done specifically not to find anything. And they designed the studies so they would show no connection. Now, what I tell audiences is what you need to notice is that they never resort to the scientific studies. What they've used is what we call epidemiologic studies. And these are studies that just populations of people who's had the vaccine, and then they look at statistical tables and decide whether or not there's a connection. Well, in scientific circles, one thing we know is epidemiologic study is the weakest type of study you can do, and it's the easiest to manipulate. So most people know that you can use that study to tell just about any story you want to, and that's why they always resort to them. And then they'll go to the media and say, well, we studied 46,000 people and we found no connection to any of this. They're perfectly safe. And ironically, this is the statement at the end of their declaration. No further studies need to be done. Now, there's nothing in the scientific field, whether it's physics, astrophysics, chemistry, or medicine, in which scientists say no studies need to be done after this. Everything needs to be constantly studied because things that we thought were true in science change later. We find out it's not true. So the very fact that they don't want any more studies done shows that they're terrified of what someone may show them that would do an unbiased study. And if you look at the people who are doing these studies where they report safety, virtually all of them, the authors of the paper, have connections to the vaccine companies. In fact, there's one fellow out there who writes a lot of these articles declaring how safe vaccines are. He actually is a developer of one of the vaccines, the rotavirus vaccine. And so he's making money off the vaccine himself, and he's writing these articles about safety. So that kind of gives you a perspective. It's sort of, again, like the financial crisis where you have people who are receiving huge amounts of money from these financial institutions, and they're assuring everybody that their investments are safe right up to the time of the collapse. So, you know, you have to start being very astute in who you're going to believe and who's telling the truth. And as I said, if you look at the scientific studies, where, for instance, they do animal studies, they do tissue studies, they do human tissue studies, they have done thousands of these on aluminum mercury exposure and found that it is enormously damaging to the brain, even in very small concentrations, and that the type of mercury they put in vaccines is infinitely more toxic than the type that's in fish, and that it stays in the brain for a lifetime. And this is one of the big problems. If you have your child vaccinated at 6 months and a year and on through 5 years or 10 years, that child has an accumulated amount of mercury in the brain that's going to be there for it's going to be doing damage to the brain for the rest of that child's life. So a lot of these things are irreversible. You can do them, but you can't undo them. When you destroy the child's immune system or cause its immune system to produce abnormal reactions, which is well demonstrated in the scientific literature, you can't change it. The child's immune system is ruined for the rest of that child's life. So the step in accepting this vaccine is not to be taken lightly, because so much of this is irreversible. So that's one of the things I try to warn mothers about the most, is there's so many of these things you can't take it back and say, well, I'm sorry I did, I won't do it anymore. Well, that's good that you're not doing it anymore, but still there's going to be a certain amount of permanent damage.
And, you know, I think the things that's so disturbing to me, Russell, is the fact that they can find scientists who will prostitute themselves for money. And if you look at these studies that say vaccine is safe, mercury is safe, and vaccines are safe, they're coming, they're being paid for by the vaccine companies. When you see independent studies, they almost universally tell you about the dangers of mercury. Why is it that only the studies paid for by the vaccine manufacturers say that the mercury is safe, and all the other scientific studies by scientists all across the world point out how dangerous it is? I think it's because we have prostitutes within the medical profession, within the scientific community, and these people have blood on their hands.
Well, that's been written about extensively. There are a great number of articles on fraud and deceit in the scientific world. Writing about this problem, that in numerous medical journals, there's articles that are written by people who are receiving large amounts of money from a pharmaceutical company. And so the article is designed to say a drug is safe or a treatment is safe. And when independent, as you say, independent researchers look at it, they find terrible problems. And we hear about this every day in the news, where a drug was approved, and then once it's out in the general market, thousands, if not tens of thousands of people are harmed by the drug. And you say, well, how could it go through 5-10 years of study approved by the FDA, and suddenly when it's released, all of these terrible problems are found? And many of the investigations looked back at it and found out, well, actually, this was found before the drug was ever released, and the FDA and these companies covered it up. Well, here's one of the most frightening things, I think, about vaccine manufacturing. Right now, we know that most vaccines that are used in the world, including the United States, are manufactured in China. And those vaccine companies are under FDA review once every 13 years. In the United States, it's every 2 years. Well, in communist China, it's every 13 years. And when the FDA goes to China to look at the factory, they're not allowed to enter the factory, and they must accept the word of the scientists in the factory and the owners of the factory that indeed they're doing what they say they're doing. Well, let's just look at vaccine contamination before the Chinese became the manufacturers of vaccines for the world. A recent study, or a study they did some time ago, looked at six major vaccine manufacturers, many of which make vaccines for the United States. They found upwards to 50 to 60% of the vaccines were contaminated with other viruses and bacteria, and that some of these viruses and bacteria could cause babies' brains to develop abnormally or produce spontaneous abortion in women. And produce all sorts of chronic illnesses, including autoimmune diseases. So that before, when they were produced even in Western factories, there was a major problem with contamination. Well, in China, every day we hear another story that, oh, melamine was in the baby formula, and 6,000 to 10,000 infants were harmed, and a great number died. And now we're finding melamine and more things contaminated in Chinese pharmaceutical manufacturing. So their contamination is far greater than ours, and the inspections of their plants are non-existent. So the vaccines that are going to be produced now that are entering the United States are heavily contaminated by who knows what. And, of course, this is a communist country. This is an enemy of the United States. People need to remember that almost all the weapons being used to kill our soldiers in Iraq and Afghanistan come from China. So they're not our friends. They're our enemies. They're supplying weapons to kill our soldiers. And now they're supplying vaccines that's going to kill our citizens and our babies and our children and produce chronic diseases in our children. So people need to be quite aware of this is something quite serious. No one is checking on these vaccines now to see what's in them. But I can assure you that some of the organisms that have been found so far are quite frightening. And we remember some of the disasters, for instance, with the polio vaccine. It contained a cancer-causing virus called SV40. Hundreds of millions of people were infected with that SV40 virus for a lifetime, and not only that, they now found that the virus is passed on through generations, so that every generation now is becoming infected with this cancer-causing virus. It produces a number of brain cancers, lung cancers, pancreatic cancers, all sorts of things.
And then we wonder, of course, why the incidence of cancer is rising in our society. And, of course, nobody will ever tell you, no person from U.S. Public Health Service at the CDC will ever admit that they contaminated the entire population of our country and a large part of the world with the original polio vaccine, because if you knew the truth, you knew about simian virus 40, their infection there, why, you wouldn't trust your doctor again. And ladies and gentlemen, until the doctors are willing to stand up and expose what's going on, you should not trust them. And I hate to say that, I love them, but you see, most of them do not know. And if they do not know, they're just as dangerous as somebody who does know and is lying to you.
That's exactly right. I mean, before I got involved in all of this, studying this in depth, I didn't know.
I didn't either. In fact, I gave myself and my whole staff the hepatitis B vaccine, because they were telling us anybody in the health field should take the hepatitis B vaccine. Now I have an unexplained peripheral neuritis, and it's really quite uncomfortable. And of course, I wonder how many other people got that, because it's a very common complication of hepatitis B vaccine. But I didn't know. I certainly wouldn't have given it to my staff and certainly wouldn't have taken it myself had I realized the background of the hepatitis B vaccine.
Well, none of us knew. And, you know, all of these vaccines, and, you know, when I was a resident and I had children, I had them vaccinated. I didn't know anything terrible about vaccines. I knew bad things could happen, but I thought they were extremely rare. But all these things I'm telling people, I didn't know at the time. Of course, my children received far fewer vaccines than they do now. Our children received, I think, we figured up 11 vaccines. Well, now they get 36 to 40 vaccines before they start school. They get 36 by age 2. Well, you can't give 36 vaccines and these powerful adjuvants to a child 1.5, 2 years of age and not have the brain affected.
And the adjuvants, of course, are chemicals that are put in there to increase the immune response, but it produces an inflammatory response in the brain, isn't that right?
Exactly, and this has been demonstrated in hundreds of experiments showing that if you inject these immune-stimulating adjuvants, it causes the brain to become inflamed for decades. Not just a short while, but for decades the brain stays inflamed. And what I've been looking at, I've written a couple of articles on this, is that when you look at the autistic brain, and they did a study in autistic people from age 3 years to age 45, they found the brain had been inflamed the entire time. That's to age 45 years. So the brain is intentionally inflamed. Well, what can do that is multiple vaccines. For instance, children are going to the doctor and getting 7 to 9 vaccines in one office visit. Well, the pediatrician has been assured that's perfectly safe. Well, our science doesn't say it's safe. Our science says that if you do that, give 7 doses of these powerful immune adjuvants at one sitting, that produces intense inflammation in the brain. Well, that's why the child screams and cries and is fitful for days to weeks after the vaccine, because the brain's inflamed. That brain can stay inflamed for years after that vaccine and produce anywhere from just subtle things like the child becomes irritable, angry very easily, behavioral problems, can become depressed. I'm amazed at the number of children now that have depression, major depression, small children. 6, 7 years old, 9 years old, and the government's wanting to treat them with major antidepressants. Well, why do we have so many children that are depressed? Well, we know you can produce depression by stimulating the immune system excessively. So I'm not surprised with the large number of vaccines that are being given that so many children are now having problems with major depression, and there's so many suicides, because it also will lead to suicide by inflaming the brain and producing this reaction. But we're only going to see a worsening of this because they keep adding vaccines to the schedule. And some states are passing laws that says parents can't opt out, that everybody has to have these vaccines whether they want them or not. State of New Jersey, Maryland, New York. So a lot of states are starting to jump on the bandwagon of forcing vaccination on everybody, not just children, but adults, everyone, by force. They'll do it by court order. And, you know, in the state of Maryland, they vaccinated 1,000 teenagers.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. What were you saying about the state of Maryland now?
Well, in the state of Maryland, they had a court order where they forced 1,000 teenagers and children to have vaccination, and they did it in the courtroom. And they told the parents, if you don't bring the child into the courtroom for vaccination, you'll go to jail and be fined. So, you know, I got involved in it, and I wrote an article for a Maryland paper telling them that they ought to impeach the governor. And this judge should have 1,000 lawsuits filed against him for producing brain injury in these children. And then I suggested that they publicly make the governor of the state say, have you had your vaccines in your family? Well, they asked him that publicly, and he refused to answer. He said, that's my private business. So I suggested that they impeach him. If these vaccines are safe and everybody should get them, then they should forcibly vaccinate the governor and his family on television, just like they're doing the rest of the population. But I guarantee you, if you had a law that said politicians had to be forcibly vaccinated, you wouldn't see any of these laws on the books, because they won't take the vaccine, and you won't see the vaccine manufacturing CEOs and board members getting these vaccines, because they know that these vaccines are harmful. But I think if any law is ever passed, these people should be forcibly vaccinated with every vaccine they manufacture, because they're telling us it's perfectly safe.
And they know it isn't true. Well, our guest this evening has been Dr. Russell Blaylock, and we'll be telling you in a moment or two about the books that we carry that he's written, which we think are very, very important. Russell, parting thought before we let you go.
Well, I compare this to what's going on right now with this financial shakeup. This should convince people once and for all that this government cannot be trusted. Regulators certainly cannot be trusted. That there's nefarious people in high positions and powerful positions that do not have your best interests at heart, and they're willing to destroy your lives to make a profit. And they have government protection to do that, just like in this financial crisis. So this should finally convince people to be wary of what's being said by these health authorities and these people in positions of power, the CDC, etc.
We're going to have to let you go, Russell. Thank you very much for being with us. We're really looking forward to having you out here with us and visiting with you after the conference. Bye-bye. God bless.
Bye-bye. God bless.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I do hope you enjoyed our conversation with Russell Blaylock. I always look forward to having him, and I do hope that many of you out there in the listening audience will be able to come to our annual conference on the 26th of October at the Aptos Seascape Golf Course. Doors will open at 8 in the morning. We'll go, of course, until 5:30 in the evening. Hope you can be there. It'll be a great time. So give us a call. We're going to be serving lunch. We have to know how many are coming. You're going to have a reservation. Dr. Blaylock will be there. Joanna Michelson, who is a medium and in touch with the beings from the other dimension. Patrick Wood talking on finances. And you better know what's going on today, because an awful lot of people are going to get wiped out before this is over. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Now let me suggest Dr. Blaylock's books, which we carry, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life, Natural Strategies for Cancer Patients, that's Natural Strategies for Cancer Patients, and Excitotoxins, The Taste That Kills. We have a four-tape set with Dr. Blaylock called Life-Saving Secrets. We carry his DVD entitled Nutrition and Behavior, because there's a great deal of relationship between nutrition and behavior. That's nutrition and behavior. Now, if you'd like to know about vaccines, we carry Neil Miller's books, Vaccines, Are They Safe and Effective? That's Vaccines, Are They Safe and Effective? And Vaccines and Autism. We have his new book, which is, of course, almost like an encyclopedia. It's called The Vaccine Safety Manual. It's almost 600 pages. Dr. Blaylock writes the foreword, a very important book. That's The Vaccine Safety Manual, everything you really need to know about vaccines. But if you're only going to get one book, I suggest Vaccines, Are They Safe and Effective by Neil Miller, and it's an excellent book. And then, of course, we also carry Dr. Ave's DVD, Mercury Autism and the Global Population Agenda. Mercury Autism and the Global Population Agenda. And if you get that, you get a free CD-ROM with literally thousands of pages of government documents going into the background of the fact that they know the mercury is destroying the minds of our children, and they're giving them anyway. We actually have the Simpson Wood Report, about 150, 200 pages, secret government report where the CDC met with the vaccine manufacturers and admitted, of course, that the mercury in the vaccines was harming the children, but they had to keep it secret. And as one of the people there said, well, none of my grandchildren are ever going to get those vaccines. But then they went right ahead to keep it secret from the American people. So then, of course, we have Sherry Tenpenner's excellent book on vaccines. And we have a four-tape set on vaccines. You need to get this information. You need to know what's going on out there. If you have any question about the drug companies, we carry a book by Dr. Marshall Angel on the staff at Harvard. The former editor of the New England Journal of Medicine, the most prestigious medical journal in America. The book is What You Should Know About the Drug Companies, and of course it goes into the background of how they're lying to you and how they have the prostitutes, the medical doctors, and the scientists working for them, coming up with phony studies to convince you the products are safe when they really aren't. What You Should Know About the Drug Companies by Dr. Marshall Angel has been targeted for destruction by the drug companies. You do not stand up to big pharmaceutical, because we're talking about billions of dollars every year. Billions of dollars every year being used to harm our people. We have a little book on statin drugs, and we have a four-tape study on statin drugs, a four-tape set. And, of course, many times the statins are carcinogenic. They do a tremendous amount of harm. They do absolutely no good. The scientific studies, if you read them, they'll tell you a 30% reduction in the death, you know, if you take Lipitor, 30% reduction in death if you take Lipitor. And then in small print, they say, yes, if 100 people don't take the Lipitor, 3 die, and if they do take the Lipitor, 2 die, you see the difference between 3 and 2, 30%. Take our drug, and we'll make billions of dollars off you. And, of course, it's not the lowering the cholesterol at all. It's the anti-inflammatory influence of the drug. So understand we're being lied to. Please pray for America. Pray for revival and pray for Radio Liberty. You can hear our next program at RadioLiberty.com. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Bill Sardi, and we're going to be talking about what's really going on in the world today, and certainly what's happening as far as the financial markets are concerned. These are certainly the most dangerous times that I can remember, and I lived through the Great Depression. I can remember the other people coming to the door begging for a sandwich or some means of sustenance, and of course, there were people there regularly. People in America were hungry because of the Great Depression, and yet we are seeing changes in America today that I believe, of course, foreshadow a serious depression in America and the total transformation of our monetary system. And, of course, people are just saying, well, trust the government, trust the people who got us into this mess, give them more power, and yet, of course, you're not going to solve the problem created by excessive debt by creating more debt. And the total debt in the United States today is well over $50 trillion. Now, I'm not talking about Social Security. I'm not talking about Medicare. Those are all other debts that we have. But just simply the federal debt, the state debt, the city debt, the personal debt, the auto debt, credit card debt, over $50 trillion. And, of course, a lot of that is never going to be repaid. Now, you compare that, of course, with the gross domestic product, which is about, I think, about $14 trillion, so that if all the work of everybody in this country would join together to pay off the debt, it would take over 3 years to pay off the we wouldn't even actually about we've got about 3.65 times the GDP as debt in this country, and there's no way it will ever be paid off. With that as the background, Bill Sardi, thank you so very much for being with us.
Illusion, reality.
Right.
Well, Dr. Stan, you've been saying that for so long. It's such a game now to so many people. It is now. And I know a lot of people will tell me and call me and say, Bill, please don't say that. The late, great United States of America. It'll never be the same. Or as the deputy leader in Germany of the Social Democrats, speaking from the Bundestag in Berlin, says the world will never be the same as it was before the crisis. The United States will lose its superpower status in the world financial system. So the marker has been laid down. We will never be the power that we once were. And for most people, this is just too far. They don't understand all the data that sits here on my desk, and I see no way out. There is no bailout. It's only a temporary illusion. As we see something that is on a sinking ship and there's no way to stop it from sinking, they're trying to get you to jump on board. And that's what the bailout turns out to be. The FDIC admitting now this is the deposit agency that insures your bank accounts, that only about 63% of the deposits in banks today is properly covered to the $100,000 limit because of inflation. And, of course, if you keep printing money and so on, we'll get into the causes of inflation momentarily, but so many billions and billions of dollars at risk in a crisis like this, as so many people don't have full coverage by the FDIC. And, by the way, if the FDIC had a treasure chest that was limitless, there would still be this problem, and they're not unlimited. They're running out of money. They averted a disaster by having Washington Mutual picked up by the J.P. Morgan.
Hold that thought, Bill. Bill would be right back. I'll go right ahead. Our guest is Bill Sardi.
Well, as you know, Dr. Stan, this is just an unheralded time to be alive and see all this happening. Very predictable from some sources. Certainly the Mises School of economics and talking about we can't continue with fiat money, that is just printing it at the printing press. We can't continue with fractional banking, that is where banks take in one of your dollars and loan out 10. And so you just can't go on this way. And they couldn't get this bill passed. They're taking it to the Senate now. This was in the House. A stunning upset, historically as big as, well, dumping that tea in the Boston Harbor to upset the British with their onerous tax system. And the opposition to this bailout program came from a rather strange source. The New York Times reporting tonight that Nancy Pelosi, the head of the Democratic Party, could not convince the congressional representatives of poorer precincts, this is the Latino community and on down, the black community, they couldn't pass a bill, as Jesse Jackson said, that's going to bail out the country. It's going to bail out the country club, he says. We don't need to bail the country club out, just the country. And the Hispanic leadership saying, well, the last thing I need to do is go back home and tell the people I voted for a $700 billion bailout, some of which will guarantee the rich, this is the way they see it. So what happens here is, and this is the way it is, frankly. No, this bailout program does not stop one person from losing their house. It's all about banks. It's not about consumers. But very interesting, how did we get into this mess? We got into this mess when a few years ago we made provision by law that it was a right for even low-income Americans to have the right to buy a home. We started out with a law, the United Nations International Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Racial Discrimination. That was in the 1960s. It went on into the Clinton era, and we're not pointing fingers or laying blame. We're just mentioning how it happened. And of course, eventually this got into Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, the loan agencies that back up our banks, provide the money, and went on into a subprime market. What he means is they allowed people, millions of families, who could not qualify for a mortgage in a free market economy.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment with Bill Sardi. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Bill is simply pointing out, of course, a big problem with what's going on today, and the reason we got into the mess in large part was because of United Nations edict picked up in this country that everybody should be able to have a house. And so the edict went out to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, which, of course, has always been an extension to the government, even though that they pretended that they weren't, and so they could pay tens of billions of dollars to their CEOs and to their executive staff, but they were really an extension of the government, and they were simply told to make sure that people who couldn't afford homes could buy them, and so people who did not have adequate income were allowed to buy homes with nothing down, no interest payment, or either no principal payment, and everything was doing. In fact, some people were actually buying homes. I had a friend who bought a home, and he got $25,000 back for buying the home. He didn't put anything into it. He got $25,000. He bought the home. He kept it for 6 to 9 months. He sold it. He made a nice profit. And then he was smart enough, of course, not to buy another home. He's renting now, waiting as the prices simply are collapsing across America. And here in California, down 31% in this past year. And about half the mortgages, the home mortgages in America today, are underwater. In other words, there's more owed on the mortgage than the house is actually worth, and the price of homes are going to continue cascading downwards. Pick up the story there, Bill.
Delusion, back to those wonderful words that you started the program off with, and you really have to keep your eyes open at the sleight of hand. Late this evening, the Securities Exchange Commission moved to relax what they call the asset rule. You see, the third quarter of the year was up. It ended Tuesday today. And, of course, that means the banks are soon going to be reporting their quarterly reports to the Securities Exchange Commission. These are publicly traded companies with stocks and so on. And this is what caused this all to come out of the closet. They were hoping it would happen after the election, but because banks have these quarterly requirements, reporting requirements, the collapsing banks got onto the front pages of the newspapers. You notice how they're keeping the bank runs away from us. Washington Mutual had $16 billion of cash pulled out of their bank by their depositors in a 10-day period. Now, did you hear anything about a bank run on Washington Mutual? No. Of course, and I think it's responsible not to create a panic in the public, but nonetheless, it's something big that occurred, and it's going on quietly as the news media doesn't report it. How are they going to get out of this next quarter looking so bad? The SEC just made a little move and said, if you're a bank and you're holding these assets that are really going at fire sale prices, that you're allowed to reevaluate them at the price it would be, as they call it, the price it would be worth in a more orderly market. Nonsense. They're overinflated as it is. J.P. Morgan predicting a 37% decline in prices of homes nationally, 58% in California, 64% in Florida. Coming soon to a community near you, there will be a collapse of these home prices. Good for buyers, lousy for sellers, and certainly for people who got into these subprime adjustable rate mortgages.
Well, of course, even much more of a disaster for the banks. And, of course, what's happening is the banks really are insolvent. People are getting their money out of banks because they're really afraid. They're actually putting into the Treasury bills at absolutely no interest. In fact,
no interest, because the last fort that's going to fall, I hope the audience can pick this up, is the last fort to fall is the government themselves, the Treasury. So you can go to the Treasury Department website and even... I don't think you can get them now, I think, is the problem, but you're getting almost no interest. But it's considered to be safe because that's them. That's who handles the money. That's who issues it. So they think that's maybe the safest place to be. As you can understand, Dr. Stan has pointed this out before, our real inflation rate is around 11 to 14%. The amount of money you could make on the best savings account would be 3 to 4%. You're losing money putting it in the bank today, and yet the banks don't get it, that they're doing, really taking the shaft to the consumer. You're losing money to put it in the bank. You can't put it in real estate. You can't put it in stocks. You don't know where to put it, and this is the problem. This evening, Associated Press reporting on housing prices in the United States says there's no evidence of a bottom yet. Now, the real estate brokers in the country say, oh, buy now, because it's low. Well, the only reason you could possibly buy now is because interest rates are going to go up predictably in the future here. We're going to have to go get our money overseas from Japan, from China, from places that we do business with where we buy their goods, they end up with our dollars. And now they're going to charge us more interest. So that's a possibility, but you have to wager or game this against how far are these going to decline? And I did see a highway billboard on Sunday evening coming back from Palm Springs. We have 8,000 homes in inventory for $200,000 or less and a phone number to call. So you're going to see this giant auctioning off of homes. The values are going to collapse and collapse to real fair market prices. And this is just the way it's going to be. Your country's never going to be the same. And what does the Congress of the United States do when all this is going on? Illusion, delusion, and the Senate, while we're distracted, passes a huge war funding bill this evening in the shadow of the Wall Street bailout, $488 billion to fund the war, Afghanistan and Iraq. And, of course, we're distracted while they've got enough money to throw $500 million away in this phony war. That they keep an economy going, people have to understand this is, when you have a bad economy, you find a war to fight, because that's an old game that keeps people's minds, we've got an enemy to fight, and then it hires, a lot of people, and keeps business happy because they've got you know, everything from jeeps and tanks to army boots to produce to keep us at war. So
I think it was even so interesting to talk about boondoggles. The Pentagon wanted a certain number of fighter planes. I think it was it's an F-21, I think it is. And so Congress appropriated money for 20 more F-21s than the military actually wanted. Why are they building more planes than the military has asked for when the military is asking for far more than they need? Why they're building them, of course, to stimulate the economy. They're just going to throw money at the economy and massive amounts of money on all sorts of earmarks and benefits and you know, actually they're appropriating money so they can deliver nutritious food to people at in their homes. You know, they're going to people,
yes.
Poor people need special health foods. They're going to deliver them. You don't even have to go out for them. Government's going to provide. The difficulty is government does not have the money to do it. We are having to borrow $2.5 to $3 billion every single day from foreign countries and foreign governments, from foreigners and living elsewhere, to fund what we're spending. And what does the Congress do in the face of that? They increase spending massively. They tell you that, of course, the deficit this year is going to be about $416 billion, something like that. But they neglect to mention, of course, that they stolen all the money from Social Security and Medicare that should have gone into a fund, but it didn't. It was all spent. And then, of course, they neglected to say that the price of the war over in Iraq and Afghanistan is off budget. And then they forgot to mention the $160 billion, $68 billion they gave away earlier this year to stimulate the economy. And they just didn't bother to mention, of course, that they're loading almost $750 billion to foreign central banks within the last week and a half that they don't have. They're lending money they don't have. What would you and I do if we spent money we didn't have? We'd get into trouble. And of course, we're ever doing everything wrong. We're giving more money to Wall Street that created the problem in the first place. Go right ahead.
I was talking to a friend last week and at a little breakfast place and saying the United States is out of money. And somebody heard that in the next booth and laughed and thought I was such a fool. We're out of money, folks. It's a fire sale in the United States. And illusion, delusion, reality. Here's Mike Whitney talking from the Information Clearinghouse. He's saying we were 500 trades away at the stock market, stock trades away from an Armageddon last Thursday. 500 more trades in the stock market, the Dow Jones would have dropped from 11,000 to 8,300. They saw it coming. They injected $100 billion of liquidity into the market. They're juggling so many balls. How are they going to keep the stock market from collapsing down to the 7,000 or 8,000 level? And it's inevitable. It's going to happen. And in the meantime, Mike Whitney points out, what did they do to us while all this was occurring? How were they trying to pressure Congress into voting for this bailout program? CNBC was blaring information that if they didn't pass it, it would cause a stock market plunge that would erase $1.2 trillion in pensions, 401k plans, and other wealth. Of course, that's dubious. But do you understand the pressure they were putting on? And as Mike Whitney points out, they just let the market fall. That was the day before yesterday, yesterday exactly, that where the market dropped 777 points. There was no plunge team there. You've heard about that from Dr. Stan. The plunge team, that's the president and other forces on Wall Street, able to kick in $30 billion or so to keep the market from collapsing at the end of a day. Of course, they let it go down and drop and fall, trying to, as Mike Whitney says, blackmail the Congress in with pressure, playing around with your retirement funds and pension funds, they were, and just playing with this like it's their own money.
And of course, basically what they did yesterday was to punish the American people for daring to oppose the elite who run this country.
That's
the market dropped 770 points. Today they injected money, they raised it. This is all done by the Working Group on Financial Markets. Look it up on the Internet. The Working Group on Financial Markets, they manipulate the stock market. Go right ahead, Bill.
One of the things we have a hard time understanding is, who's the richest man in the world? Bill Gates? Warren Buffett? They're in the $40 to $50 billion category. What if I tell you today, how will you react if I tell you there are trillionaires on this planet? Maybe some people who have hundreds of trillions of dollars? Yes. Who could throw in enough money to bail out this and the whole world that are maybe behind this whole thing? I meet on Wednesdays with a man who does some trading with some of these big people. Right now, doing business with a man who has $250 billion times 10 bank accounts of that much. Can you imagine? The reason why the Forbes list of the richest people in the world, that's only because they're able to find that out because they're involved in publicly traded companies. Private wealth will never be revealed. We don't know the real wealth of the people that run the Federal Reserve, some of them in England, and various families from the Rockefellers you've heard, and others. And some of these people likely to be trillionaires. Are they the ones with the handle on the finances of the world? And what are they actually doing? We don't know. We'll never hear this. But I think somehow it makes people feel something's wrong when there are trillionaires on this planet. I don't know. I can't say. I can't work out of envy. I can only tell you that it appears there are some trillionaires. These are hidden from view. These are maybe the people that control our politicians and other people. And, of course, we never hear of any of this. What's going on in our country is an absolute, it's not a collapse of what, well, they want to call it a recession or a depression. It's an insolvency. There's no money. And how can I prove that point to you? The Federal Reserve, which is where money comes from, yes, it's printed as paper money by the U.S. Mint, but the Federal Reserve buys it for pennies on the dollar, and then that's the money supply. And the Federal Reserve is out of money, or will be out of money, and got rid of it all here recently with all the buy-ups of these other financial institutions. The FDIC, which insures all the bank accounts, needs $200 billion by all estimates to cover the bad bank accounts in the country, and they're fast running out, and had they needed to come up with the money to cover the bad accounts at Washington Mutual, which have been pawned off on J.P. Morgan, then they would have completely run out of money on one bank. So we would have had no insurance for any of our bank accounts. So those two are out of money. Where do we go for money? We go to foreign accounts, that is to Japan and China. We owe already Japan $592 billion. I think China, we owe them $502 billion. These are numbers. I think Britain, we owe $250 billion. And so we're going to go to them for more money, but at much higher interest rates. So the bailout will end up getting that money at a higher interest rate, and therefore you're going to pay more for a house, and that means what? You're not going to bail out the housing industry, because the housing industry is hooked like it's on drugs. The foreign countries of the world pressuring the United States to put some teeth behind requirements to get a home loan. The United States keeps bucking this. You hear about the money, you don't hear about the restrictions. That is, no more no down payment loans.
Hold
no
that
more
thought. We'll be right back in just a moment with Bill Sardi. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Curso Bill Sardi is pointing out that they're going to start putting restrictions on people buying homes now. We've got to get back to some sort of a sane situation. Before, you could buy a home with 5% down. You could buy a home with nothing down. You could buy a home with nothing down and get $25,000 back. That's just too good to be true. And, of course, it was too good to be true, because now comes the day of reckoning, and suddenly now they're talking about they're going to have 20% down on your home, and, of course, you're not going to get these low interest rates. The interest rates are going to start going up. and we're finding interest rates going up on commercial projects, or there is no money available for commercial projects, and suddenly the whole financial infrastructure of America is beginning to contract. And it's not just in the United States. It's all throughout the world because we've exported our inflation to all these other countries.
We're already loaning money to foreign countries to bail them out before we even get permission from the from our own Congress.
Right. And, of course, you know, we've given three-quarters of $1 trillion to foreign central banks within the last week and a half, trying to keep the world banking system intact. And if you think that a paltry $700 billion is going to solve the problem, you're sadly mistaken. This is just the down payment on trillions of dollars they're going to have to create, and trillions of dollars will be highly inflationary and will simply destroy the value of our money and our pension funds and our insurance policies and our annuities and
well,
our savings.
Let's try to make that clearer for your listeners. Right. If there's two options, buy the money, loan it, get it back from the Asian markets and other markets, and they'll invest in the U.S. dollar, and then we pay them back for loaning their money. Or, as Bernanke, head of the Federal Reserve, has said, we could, you know, print the money and then drop it from helicopters. And he said we'll try and avoid that option. Now, that's where, if you're just printing the money, you're diluting the value of existing money. Now, the public doesn't understand that. Just if you just print more money, just give me some. But they don't understand that's how they're stealing some of your money out the back door of the bank, because that means the money that you had in the bank is now worth less. That's called inflation. And you put $10,000 in the bank, the first year it loses $800 of its value. And then the next year just about the same, and so on. So you're losing money putting it in the bank. The bank gets to make money off that deposit. You get to lose money because of inflation, and it's hidden. Now, I'm sure you all got the impression that this was a sudden, came out of nowhere, the collapse of the American economy. We had to take sudden action. Mr. Paulson, the head of the Treasury, Hank Paulson, then had to draft this sudden document for the bailout, this three-page document, with George Bush. He had been brought in months earlier to draft this, and in one day, that three-page document, after it was denounced by the House of Representatives, became a 106-page document. Isn't that interesting? So it's not a $700 billion bailout. That's just the down payment on trillions of dollars we're going to be at risk to keep this thing afloat. Again, just printing money. How long have they known this is going to happen? Well, according to the New York Times, we're reading an article from September the 30th, today, 1999. That was, what, 9 years ago? And it says in here, I'm reading, and it says, Fannie Mae is taking on significantly more risk, which may not pose any difficulties during flush economic times, but the government-subsidized corporation, that is Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, may run into trouble in an economic downturn, prompting a government rescue similar to that of the savings and loan industry in the 1980s. If they fail, the government will have to step up and bail them out the way it stepped up and bailed out the thrift industry in the 1980s. Ladies and gentlemen, that was written 9 years ago. They knew the consequences of this then. The parties that be knew. They knew getting into subprime loans. They knew all this. This isn't something that just suddenly happened and nobody knew it was coming. They created false demand for homes, supply and demand. That's how you determine price. Can you imagine somebody bought a relatively low-priced home, $300,000 or $400,000, with nothing down, lied on their liar's loan income statement, was given, like Dr. Stan said, even a bonus of $25,000, even worse, the speculative increase in that home as that home went up to $500,000 and $600,000. Then they loan money on that, and now they're sitting on a house that might be worth $200,000, and they can't sell it, and they can't pay any of those loans back. They're living a lifestyle they hadn't earned.
And, of course, our guest this evening is Bill Sardi. And, of course, we're talking about what's going on. We're going to get to Claudia, who's calling in from Michigan, in just a moment, to talk about the question, what's going to happen to people on Social Security and Medicare? We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and right now we've got Claudia calling us from Michigan, and she has a question. Claudia, what is your question?
Yes, hi, Dr. Stan. Yes, for your guest, I was wondering if you could tell us what's going to happen when the government is bankrupt, and what happens to people who depend on Social Security or Medicare or disability? What's going to happen to those funds?
All right, fine. I think that's an excellent question, and I think it's a question that nobody wants to address, because Social Security and Medicare are bankrupt, and very, very soon, of course, we'll be putting out more than we're taking in, and there's just no way they can meet their obligations. Bill, what's going to happen to people like Claudia
who
depend upon Social
Security? You hear the trillions to save the banks, and then in the year 2017, I think it starts in the year 2012 around the corner, is that Medicare and Social Security are underfunded, you've heard this before, Dr. Stan, to the tune of $75 trillion. You will have no way that you can possibly get a Social Security check. You will certainly have no way of getting health care, and this is why I keep pushing the stay healthy without the drugs and without the doctoring, because it's all going to collapse. I see health care insurance premiums going up 9%. I love the idea of the healthcare industry pricing itself out of business, because they are so derelict and self-serving and ineffective anyway, peddling those drugs that only end up killing people. So it's a terrible thing to say, but it's true. And so many naive Americans have a faith in this kind of thing. If you think we've got trouble now, what do we do with the $75 trillion that's coming? And I know there's a lot of finger-pointing. And I see today, you know, about a third of the people voted for the bailout just in polls, and a third say, well, no, don't go for it. And some saying, well, the Democrats are more to blame than the Republicans and all this. And did we forget? Certainly the Democrats are more to blame. But did we forget about, the years back, 1980s, and a senator who was helping out a friend of his who had slipped him $200,000 in the savings and loan crisis? That senator, John McCain, his friend, Charles Keating, Lincoln Savings and Loan, left 20,000 Lincoln Savings and Loan customers with vanishing savings accounts. And this is the man you want to be president. I know a lot of Republicans there. I know you've got your favorite candidate, but is this the guy you forgot about? And don't forget, the Republicans have been in charge of the Securities Exchange Commission, appointed Christopher Cox to the wonderful Securities Exchange Commission.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Of course, we have Claudia calling from Michigan, wanted to know what's going to happen to people who are dependent on Social Security and Medicare. And, of course, the problem is that they are going to run out of money. Claudia, what we're going to have to do? Hope when we get out of this mess we're in today, hopefully we'll get back to a free society. We'll do away with all the socialism. We'll return the responsibility for taking the care of the needy to the local community. When I started medicine, we had county hospitals, and we took care of people who needed medical care and couldn't afford it. We took care of them for a fraction of the cost or for nothing. It was the responsibility of the local county to look after people. It was the responsibility of the local county to provide for the needs and to give a stipend to people who were really impoverished at that time. And then, of course, came the federal government with a promise of utopia. My goodness, we've got all the money in the world. We'll create it out of nothing. We'll provide Social Security benefits. We'll provide drug benefits. We'll provide medical benefits. Medicare will never cost, well, I think 1990 was supposed to cost $9 billion. Of course, by then it cost $90 billion. And they knew it was all a lie. But, of course, they wanted, of course, to centralize power in Washington, D.C., so they could use that power to transform the world and to bring them all, of course, into this world government that our leaders really want. Claudia, it's going to be a very difficult time. What we're going to need are responsible people who are willing to help other people. We're going to have to do it at the local level because the whole House of Cards is coming down. Bill, would you agree or disagree?
I agree. All right, Claudia, do you think that any of your money today is in the bank if you have a bank account? Savings or just a regular checkbook? Do you think any of your money is there?
It's all been let out.
If it's under $100,000, I'm hoping, yes.
Okay, well, so you know, let's just say that it's $90,000. Okay, then well, let's say it's $100,000. So $90,000 has been lent out. The banks are bankrupt, and the other $10,000 that you have, supposedly as reserve, the banks are broke, and they don't have that, so they had to go loan the money that's their reserves. So the only legal, they have legal requirements on reserves. They don't have anybody's money there right now. Of the 8,400 banks in the United States, the last quarter of the year they reported that those 8,400 banks aggregately, all total, made $55 billion. They set aside almost all of it, $50 billion, for these debts that are coming back on them, these adjustable rate, non-performing foreclosure loans on homes. So they took almost all their profits and put it aside for that. But what were their losses in that quarter? $136 billion. With only $50 billion again, they can't even keep up. We don't have any money in the bank. There is no money there. They're trying to go to the Federal Reserve, which is running out of money and can only print it. And what happens if the foreign countries of the world see us in such a derelict state and decide, we don't want to loan you the money anymore. We'll loan it and put it into euros. We're in, now, we actually have a gun to the head of some of these foreign countries. The Japanese 5 or 6 years ago said, we'd just like to take a portion of our yen, our U.S. dollars that we got that is now in our bank accounts, and put it into, of course, the euro because it was valued higher. And the United States heard that. They were just thinking about it. It was a trial balloon idea. And the next week, North Korea launched a missile over Japan into the ocean. And that was our way of saying, okay, do what you want, but we won't defend you. And, of course, the Japanese got in line and kept supplying the money that we need from them back. So, you know, we really are being a bully now. We're at our rope's end to keep this thing going, and it will collapse. Now, it's better if you look at it. Even the news reporters on CNN, MSNBC, and so on, over the weekend were saying, let this thing collapse. It's the only way, as one market analyst said, it's only way to bring discipline to the markets. And then we'll finally get everybody, the fastest way to get on our feet again, let it fall.
And, of course, we need to do away with the Federal Reserve System. We need to get back to an asset-backed security, not a debt-backed security. Claudia, do you have anything else to say? I know this is not what you'd like us to hear, that everything's going to be hunky-dory, but it's not going to be. And you have to help us get the information out and let people understand the fiat money system we're in. It's been tried hundreds of times down through the ages, whether it be ancient Florence, whether it be ancient Venice, whether it be in Greece or in Rome or in the Weimar Republic. Are being tried in Zimbabwe today. Actually, we're keeping the government in Zimbabwe in power. We put them in power. Their inflation rate is 2.5 million% a year. 2.5 million% a year, and we're of course keeping that government in power. I think they just want to see what's going to happen there. You know, what happens when you have 2.5% inflation a year? How long a society can last?
Thank you, Dr. Stan.
When everyone's getting so nervous, Dr. Stan, they're going to pull a war. I mean, this is the old thing that people do to get us distracted from the politicians and their failed systems. We've got the five carrier groups off Iran, this whole thing. We just never know what kind of October surprise they're going to pull. And, of course, it makes everyone nervous. If everybody wants to hear what I did in this crisis, and by the way, I lost a little bit of money, nothing to cry about in the IndyMac collapse, but get some cash is my suggestion. And keep it in your home in a safe place because there may be a short-term banking crisis. And, yes, you can, with the FDIC in charge of your bank, you can do online banking and you can write checks, but you can't get any cash because the line outside the bank is too long. So what you need to do is have some cash at home. We went and got a few hundred $5 bills and put them in the house, and make sure that you have a bank that looks like it's going to remain solvent. I suggest ones that didn't have any of the adjustable rate mortgages. Those might be credit unions that didn't do home loans. They might be business and commercial banks. Sometimes they go as farmers and merchants banks that didn't. They only did commercial loans, or here in the West Coast, the Union Bank of California, being Japanese-owned, didn't do any of these very conservative banking, didn't do any of the adjustable rate mortgages. So try to get your money in a bank that's least likely to have a bank run on it. And go to Costco or Walmart and get one of those little gift cards, the plastic cards, there's no expiration date, and put $100 or $200 or $300 or whatever you want dollars on it, because in a pinch and in a crisis and they've got, you know, police out in front of the banks and all, you can't get any money. Well, you can go down to Costco and just use the card and get your food. So instead of storing food, some of you might not have the room to do that or the wherewithal. These are all things that we've done in our home to get ready, because we just can't see any other way out of this. And it's inevitable that it's going to happen.
And try to get out of debt. And for people who are out there, get out of debt, get out of debt, get out of debt. Diversify, diversify, diversify. Claudia, God bless you. Thanks so much for calling.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. And let's go to Charles, who's calling from Harlem. Charles, you have a question for our guest.
Yes. Good evening, Dr. Good morning over here, Dr. Stan and Mr. Sardi. Thanks for your show. A quick question regarding inflation. I understand it is a silent tax. It does kill the value of your dollar.
Right.
How are banks able to profit from that inflation?
All right, fine. How do banks profit from inflation, Bill?
Well, you have a tacit agreement with your bank that you get to lose money and they get to make it. And because of, and this is never explained, by the way, you're going to see a number of reporters and newspapers across the country right now urging Americans to put their money into savings. And they get to loan out $10 for every one that you deposit. They only keep one out of $10 in reserve, which we just said has vanished, and it doesn't even exist. That doesn't make you feel a little queasy. And so they're making money loaning out to homes and buying cars and things like this. And so they're making an interest rate on all that money. They even got so greedy about trying to use money and put it all in play that the money that banks are transferring, when you write a check between one bank and the other, there's a little float time of 2 or 3 days. They're using that money to loan and get an interest rate on. I don't know how the government let them get away with all this, but government is just a patsy to industry now, and they're paid off, and this is what they did. So trying to use as much money as possible to float as many loans as possible. And, of course, all that money in play, and of course, what happens when a significant percentage can't pay on those loans? And that's what the adjustable rate mortgages are. About 15% of those home loans are collapsing, and now it comes back and bites you times 10, because if you lose on that loan, you've got to bring in $10 to keep the reserve amount correct. And so It's tenfold worse collapse on the bank through this fractional banking system. And so this is how this all works. The bank making a lot of money by loaning out as much of your money as possible, virtually all of it now, because you have none of your money in the bank whatsoever. It's just being covered by money that the Federal Reserve has had to loan them, as all the banks in the United States are insolvent. And they only keep 10% of the bank's deposits in reserves, so you only need one out of 10 depositors making a run on the bank. They're out of cash and they're out of business. Now, what's happening is the FDIC is really a mafia group, a Federal Deposit Insurance Company, the corporation. They're insuring your deposits at the bank, but they're trying to get the smaller and regional-sized banks to go out and fold, and bring then the people who run, take their money out and bring it to Wells Fargo, Bank of America, the bigger banks, and save the big banks and cause a collapse of these other banks. And that's what they're trying to force them to do, to save the system And, of course, there's a lot of friendships in banking. The Federal Reserve has the 7 or 10 key banks, and they're going to obviously buddy-buddy save those before the others. So this is what you have going on behind the scenes as we're all being pushed out of one bank and we're racing with our money thinking another is a safer bank. It's not safer, but as more people put deposits in, it becomes safer. So this is really what's going on, and it's just massive chaos right now. But there's no way out of this. I don't care whether you increase the amount of the bailout to trillions, the interest rates are going to go up, or the paper money you print is going to go up, and that means your money becomes worth less through inflation. So there's no way out of the collapse now. And the ship is sunk. It's just a matter of time that the public finds out about it. So it's hard to press this point on people that we are in such a dire state, and that this is where they've driven us to.
And I think, Charles, what you have to understand is you put your money in the bank, you'll get a 2% interest, but with inflation running 13.5% at the present time, you put your money in the bank, you get 2% interest, you lose 13.58%, and then, of course, with that 2% interest, you're going to have to pay income tax on. So it's a lose-lose proposition. And, of course, the cruelest tax of all is inflation. Or as you've heard me say in the past, though, Alan Greenspan, in his book, The Age of Turbulence, quotes Lenin in saying there's no better way to destroy a nation than to debauch its currency, and not one person in a million will understand what's happening, and that's exactly what's going on today. Anything else, Charles?
No, that's fine. You guys have answered it adequately. I appreciate it.
God bless.
Have a good night, and God bless.
Thank you so much. And, of course, Charles is back in Harlem, a regular listener. Of course, it's pushing 1 o'clock back there, but I appreciate his listening. And, of course, we need people all across the country telling other people about our programs. People at this time in history have to understand what's going on if we have any hope of saving this nation. Because when we get through this terrible crisis that lies ahead, and believe me, even if they pass the bailout, it is not going to solve the problem, because they're putting $700 billion out there to try to solve a multi-trillion dollar problem, and it's just not going to work. So the important thing, of course, people are going to have to understand what's going on. We're going to have to vote out most of the scoundrels in Congress. I encourage that certainly 224 congressmen had the courage to vote against the president, had the courage to vote against Nancy Pelosi, had the courage to vote against the Fed, had the courage to vote against Henry Paulson and say, we're not going to give you the $700 billion, but believe me, they're going to twist the arms of enough of them to get this legislation through. But it's still not going to solve the problem. You're talking about trillions of dollars that are going to be needed. If you do that, you destroy the value of the currency. So go ahead, pick the story up there, Bill.
Well, we have a national debt of, what are they saying, 11.3 trillion. We're in the tens of 11.
We're about 10.3 trillion now, but of course, what they don't mention, of course, is we got all of these things off budget for this year. They're telling us our debt this year, our federal deficit, 4.16 trillion, 416 billion, where it's really over 800 billion because, of course, they have to include the money they stole from Social Security and Medicare.
Right, but they say that 5.5 trillion of it is money that, quote, we owe ourselves.
Right.
Well, that means that's the money they took out of Social Security and Medicare to use before they were supposed to. So now, so they're trying to say our real debt is whatever it is, the 3 to 5 trillion left. Well, but they're admitting they stole from those accounts. They stole from Medicare and Social Security. That's our future. It's gone. It's not there. So, you know, now what? You know, as you have more older people and fewer younger people to pay taxes to pay for all this. So this is where you get into this giant mess. And they talk out of one side of their mouth and another. And if you really don't know the lay of the land here, you really won't get it. So you catch on. Washington Mutual has about $45 billion of deposits that isn't insured by the FDIC. Can you imagine what would have happened? $45 billion of people's money gone. Poof! Not covered. If that bank had failed. I mean, you're vanquishing people's life savings. All gone. Now, as Ron Paul pointed out, the best example was Lehman Brothers. Just let it fall. let this thing happen, and the market will work it out. But the more we prop this thing up, it's just putting more people on a sinking boat. You know, I said, if you had a young man and he was going to college, and he was putting up his tuition by taking loans out to get through school, and after the 4 years, he didn't make the grade and he didn't get his degree, and now this young man would push for legislation that the other students at the school who passed and got a four-year degree should now pay for his education because he doesn't have a degree and can't make a good income. Now, that's, if you think that sounds silly, that's what the bailout is. That's exactly what they're trying to tell you. And, you know, Lou Dobbs, on television with the representatives from the McCain and the Obama camps in front of him, telling them both, your candidates are idiots, right to their face. He says, neither one of these men are exhibiting the leadership we need. They're not providing it. He says, both of these men have acted like abject jokes. I mean, it was ridiculous. And they want to lead this country? Give me a break, says Lou Dobbs. You know, we've got some people saying it the right way. I just think we have too many pet candidates. We're just too linked to hating the other side, Democrat or Republican, and we can't see we're all on that same boat sinking, blaming it on the other guy. Would you like to point fingers while the ship is sinking?
And, of course, neither Obama nor McCain will solve our problems. We'll be back in just a moment to wrap up the program tonight. Well, this is Dr. Stan. We've got Russell calling us from Albany, New York, and he wants to know, what could I invest in? Is that the question, Russell?
Yes, sir.
All right, fine. Russell wants to know what to do. We've laid out the problem pretty well, but what should Russell do at the present time?
You know, Gary North, you can look up his name online, try to find his newsletter. He's giving you the best advice that we know. As we're trying to point out, you can't make money in the bank, you're going to lose money. You can't put it in the stock market. You can't put it in real estate right now. You can not put it in foreign funds because there'll be a ripple effect. You could put it in a little bit of gold, but you're going to have to take those one-tenth of an ounce gold pieces because you can't trade U.S. coins. And that's only a strategy if the U.S. dollar bill, paper money, is worthless. Then you could use that in its place. But a lot of people won't have the wherewithal to do that. Don't buy gold speculatively unless you know how to do it.
But of course, would there be any wrong, if he wanted to protect his money, would there be anything wrong with putting part of it in gold?
Nothing wrong with it because it's going to go up in value. But your problem is if you want to pay bills with it, take those little one-tenth of an ounce coins and use those because gold is going to be, an whole ounce coin is going to be worth a couple thousand dollars. It's too much, and then they're going to give you these worthless paper dollars back. So you want something that you can actually use in a pinch. And, of course, you know, we're storing food at our home. We have the cards at Costco and all these little maneuvers because anything that lasts long-term, nobody's going to get through that. But short-term, you need to be planning for a month or 6 weeks of really inability to get to money and things like this. And where you're going to invest or put it, I don't know. Everybody's trying to dive into the Treasury because that's the last fort that would fall and get the Treasury, even though you're not making any interest there. So this is the very desperate are the rich. They don't know where to put their money either. Don't think you're confused. They are, too. And so there's no safe haven at the moment.
But I think it's certainly silver is a good investment, too.
That
because
is
it's
very good investment, and silver is being overlooked, and Gary North talks about that, why silver might be better than gold at this point, because it's more tradable, and people see it, and they'll likely take it in exchange if you need to pay bills. And another good thing as I say, find the right bank. There are safer banks. They're not perfectly safe. They're all subject to a run on the bank if the public gets, depositors get nervous, but find one that didn't have the adjustable rate mortgages. Try to do what you can to avoid the brunt of this thing and try to duck a little bit, and those are the things you can do. Please, don't think, oh, my, I'll just get in a...
Bill, we're out of time. God bless. Good night. Thanks
okay.
So much.
Thank you.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and of course, Russell was just calling in as to what to do. And of course, the answer to Russell's question is to diversify, diversify, diversify. If you have a little money, put it into silver. If you have a fair amount of money, put it in gold and silver and platinum. If you have a lot of money, get some of it out of the country, into foreign currencies that you think are going to be stable. And certainly the Swiss currency seems to be far more stable than any of the other countries over in Europe because they're all tied into the euro. But, of course, we gave a talk. It was a little over 2 years ago. It was called The Financial Tsunami. And I think it's probably available up on the Internet at RadioLiberty.com. You can just scroll down the section on the, videos to the Financial Tsunami. Of course, if you'd like to get it, you can get a copy of that with a syllabus that goes with it. We talk there about what you do. And, of course, the answer is diversify, 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 and realize, of course, that fiat money systems always collapse. We have a little pamphlet called The History of Money, another one called The Financial Meltdown. They're inexpensive. We recommend them. You need to understand what's going on. The best single book on this subject, The Creature from Jekyll Island, which we do carry, written by our good friend Ed Griffin, who I met 46 years ago, and we've been friends, not close friends, but friends ever since then, and I can always call Ed and get him onto our program. And of course, then we carry the book, The Federal Reserve Conspiracy by Professor Sutton, and Fiat Money Inflation in France, the story of what happened in France in 1789 when they tried exactly what we're doing today. First of all, you have to get educated, and you don't have a lot of time because, of course, the whole house of cards is coming down. So that's the talk on the financial tsunami along with the syllabus, the book, the pamphlets, really, inexpensive, History of Money, and the Financial Meltdown, and then the three books, The Creature from Jekyll Island, going into the background of the Federal Reserve System and how the bankers were able to convince the people that, of course, they should give them the power because they were concerned about Main Street. They really wanted to help them. And, of course, basically they were concerned about the bankers making money. And of course, it all had to do with where we're moving today, towards this one world government, and using the financial and military power of the United States to bring about a world government. Well, The Creature from Jekyll Island gives you the background of how our financial system works. It's all built upon debt, and all the money is based upon debt. And once, of course, you destroy the debt, there is no more money there. And that's where we're headed today. So then, of course, the book of the Federal Reserve Conspiracy, because the Federal Reserve is a conspiracy of bankers, to prosper bankers, but even more than that, to use the financial and military power of the United States to bring about a one-world dictatorship under the control of a one-world oligarchy and a one-world ruler. So then, of course, we also suggest the fiat money inflation in France. Those things are available by calling 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, we suggest my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, to understand the spiritual forces at work. And, of course, if you want to understand them from the other side, why, they have published a little pamphlet called The Working of the Spiritual Hierarchy. It's published by the Lucis Trust, used to be the Lucifer Publishing House. And we'll provide that to anybody who orders anything else and requests a copy of The Working of the Spiritual Hierarchy. And they will tell you about these beings who've transcended time, who are really...